The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Many years have gone by now since the sensationalism of the American drug crisis reached our conscience when we saw some of the emblazoned headlines of thousands of teenagers' lives lost, destroyed by mounting use of illicit drugs. We heard about marijuana, LSD, heroin, mescaline, many other things such as Benny's, Red's, horse, and other various slang terms for the drug kick. The hippie movement, the so-called movement, which never was really a movement in a cohesive sense, but young people drifting into nihilism and always a part of the drug scene. The sensationalism of 50% of the crime picture directly attributable to the use of drugs. But believe it or not, long before illicit drugs captured all the headlines and public attention in the 60s, we in the United States already had a terrible drug problem, and one which is one of the greatest problems affecting our country. The lives of millions of people, a tremendous loss in life, in work, productivity, in the quality of our industry, and not only that, but a tremendous destruction to the American home. And that's simply the problem of alcoholism, because alcohol, make no mistake, is a drug. It's not only a drug that can intoxicate, it's a drug that can alter moods, it's a drug that can kill. Very few people seem to know the extent to which alcohol can become a drug and the way it can act on the human body. We want to do a three-part series on the subject of alcoholism, three programs over radio tailored to a special I did on the television program that shows some of the enormous information available and what you can do about the problem of alcoholism if you have a problem yourself or you know someone who does, and the chances are you know lots of people who do, many of whom don't even realize they've got a problem that could even be called alcoholism. Because believe it or not, when you find what is the definition of an alcoholic, you're going to be shocked that it may include a lot of your friends and perhaps even you. The classic idea about alcoholism, that the alcoholic is the derelict that haunts the fringes of society, that is under the bridge on the freeway or somewhere. But actually, do you realize that the derelicts and the bums, as they are called, represent less than 5% of the alcoholics in the United States? Over 10 million Americans are affected. Our broadcast crews were gathering information recently from doctors, from specialists, and recovering alcoholics for a 30-minute telecast we did entitled, Here's to That Last Drink. And the topics range from just who are the alcoholics to various causes and cures. With all of that background research, I traveled with our remote video unit to a logical setting for the program, a bar. Unfortunately, though, the telecast version is limited to 30 minutes. So there's a great deal more that can be said. The radio program offers a great deal more time and flexibility. So now, in the first of our three-part series, let's take a look at the scope and the true nature of alcoholism.
People come into a bar for several reasons. Some people come into a bar to drink. Some people come into a bar to look. I think that drinking, in some instances, is good for some people and not good for other people. Take bartenders, for instance. Most bartenders don't drink, mainly because of the fact that they've been behind the bar for so many years, they've seen what the alcohol does to the people on the other side, and they don't want to see themselves in that state. But then again, you have a lot of bartenders that do drink. It depends on what you're trying to get out of the alcohol. Some people get a natural high out of drinking. Some people just drink to get drunk.
One of the purposes of this program is to explain that there are many misconceptions about the problem of alcoholism. Many millions of Americans who actually are alcoholics simply argue they aren't alcoholics because they say, I've got a good job, a good home, a wife, a family, and I'm steady on the paycheck at my corporation. Maybe I'm an assembly line worker, a manager, executive, or whatever. And so they say, as long as I don't tipple a little before breakfast, or I've been known to have a couple of martinis for lunch or something like that, or even slip a flask in my hip pocket at the football game, but surely I don't really have a drinking problem because I could give it up any time I wanted to. After all, I do every day, at least from breakfast till, say, about noon. And so I don't really have a drinking problem. Another misconception is that a lot of people think the alcoholics are found either on Skid Row or maybe in a bar like this where they spend all their waking moments just tippling and drinking away like the proverbial barroom souse. Well, this is not true. Statistics prove it is not true. Alcoholics are anywhere and everywhere, and mostly they're found in the home. They're men and women, young and old, married and single, divorcees, widows, what have you. And they can be found anywhere from the clergy and psychologists, marriage counselors, housewives, managers, factory workers, politicians, executives, you name it. Alcoholism can be anywhere and everywhere, and usually is, because it knows few boundaries. Recent studies have shown that heavy drinking can be linked to very serious diseases, among them cirrhosis of the liver, gastritis, ulcers, pancreatitis, heart disease, cancer, especially the type of cancer you'd associate with the mouth, pharynx, larynx, esophagus, liver, and so on. But unfortunately, because of the large number of deaths, including heart disease, that are occurring every year in the United States, and these and other various illnesses, it's totally impossible to calculate the number of deaths that are attributable, at least in part, if not totally, to alcoholism simply because of so many other symptoms. In the same fashion, it's impossible virtually to tell how many people are dying of diseases attributable to cigarette smoking. It is simply inconclusive. But a real concern is, why do some people become alcoholics and others do not? And they may actually have the same drinking habits, as it were. It's an area of concern to people because there are various patterns that seem to crop up when you talk to individuals who have known alcoholics, such as it runs in the family, or perhaps even has to do with the type of blood cells you've got, or your hormonal balance, or some other such thing that they used to speculate here a few years ago about the causes of criminality. What causes alcoholism? Is there any real pattern to it one way or the other?
My name is Jean Vandervoort. I'm director of the Pasadena Council on Alcoholism. But I think what is even far more significant is that I am a recovering alcoholic. You notice that I say I'm a recovering alcoholic because there is no such thing as a cure for my disease. I will be recovering from my alcoholism until the day I die. I have a disease called alcoholism, which I did not know I had. And I had been drinking many, many years. I came from a family where there was a drinking problem. And I married a man who had a drinking problem. And then I developed one myself. When I say that I developed one, we're not sure whether alcoholism is inherited or whether it's acquired. It's a subject of much research and much discussion. And at a federal level, we are being given a great many funds now to find out as much as we can about the disease of alcoholism. But when I was a practicing alcoholic, that means I was involved in drinking alcohol. I speak of myself now as a sober alcoholic. I had no idea that I was in the grip or the process of an addictive disease. I had known for many years that I was an emotionally unstable person, and I had blamed that on my mother's drinking because I was raised in a home where I had a part-time parent. My father had to take over both jobs of mother and father, which is a general picture of what happens of a child who's raised in a family where there is a drinking parent. When there are two drinking parents, it really is rough. My father did as good a job as he possibly could. I started seeking psychiatric help when I was around 15 and a half because I was emotionally diseased. And the doctor couldn't find anything wrong with me. He said I have what was called a floating anxiety neurosis, which means I was just an uptight kid, you know. Yeah, with all that money spent on psychiatry and everything, I find out that I'm nervous. As you hear any alcoholic story, you will begin to hear an undercurrent of reasons why they drank. And one of mine was a deep grief over not being able to bear children. I lost my parents within 6 months of each other in very tragic circumstances, and that became the catalyst, I think, to really kind of push me over the cliff. I was emotionally incapable of coping with the loss of children and also the loss of my parents. And things kind of came to bear, you know. It came to an apex, and I drank more. And this is so typical of an alcoholic story. I'm really not unusual. Although at the time, I felt totally unique and different and apart and alone and deeply ashamed of the fact that I was craving alcohol more and needing it more. And I thought, well, it's because life has dealt me a dirty deal, you know. Look at all these women in the supermarkets with kids that they don't even want. And I have a lovely home and all the money in the world, and I have not been blessed with children. Well, many people would say, why didn't you adopt one? You know. And my husband and I made some attempts to adopt children, but I felt that no reputable agency would ever place a child in a home where there was a drinking problem. So here again, I was living with the humiliation and the soul suffering of having a drinking problem. Anybody who has alcoholism is deeply ashamed of it. They're not proud of it. And they hide or try to deny the fact that they drink. We're victimized by a thing called stigma, in what the world outside thinks of a drunk. People will tolerate a drunk man far more than they will a drunk woman. You know, they just will not tolerate that at all. And the most intolerant person of a drunk woman is the drunk woman herself. I became a chronic alcoholic in my late 30s. And I set up, I suppose, such a terrible condition around my husband, who incidentally had no supportive therapy to help him understand what was going on with me, nor did I. And someone had mentioned places I could go for help, such as ministers and doctors and that sort of thing, and I did. And I found those people totally ignorant of alcoholism. We're trying to change that now in our field and try to educate our medical community. But I did have one physician in the west side of Los Angeles, a young man who had come here from New York by the name of Dr. Joe Taccamini, who since has become one of my dearest friends and one of the great leaders in the field of alcoholism. And I always mention Dr. Taccamini because he is a caring physician. He cares about his whole patient. He's not just interested in the liver or the spleen or the heart or the kidneys. He's interested in the total person. He also is a very deeply spiritual man, and he had talked to me many times about my relationship to God. And by the time I got around to any sort of facing reality, most of the things that I held near and dear to me were gone. My husband, my children, my family, my own self-respect. I spent most of the last year of my drinking hospitalized in the locked ward of St. John's Hospital. I was in and out of there 9 times. I lost the use of my legs for a period of time through alcoholic neuropathy. I stopped eating, which is not unusual, and I became severely depressed. I thought that my life was over. And I credit to the doctor with taking time in talking with me about my relationship to life and my relationship to God and looking beyond my sickness to the core of me, which he said was very decent, and that he would refuse to give up the dignity of my human soul. This job has given me a chance to get out into the community and to educate people, to take the myths out of alcoholism. To let them know that it is treatable, that it has a prognosis, an excellent one, if we can get people into treatment, that there's nothing to be ashamed of, that they can live and be whole people and a part of the community of life, that they can rearrange their value systems. And so that pretty much is what has happened to me, and my life is daily spent in working in the community and trying to educate people to real facts of alcoholism. I go wherever I'm asked. I do some counseling, although that's not the major thrust of our office. We are an information, guidance, and referral center. And some days I'm pretty overwhelmed by the idea that what almost killed me has been the catalyst to teach me to live.
We'll be back with more on this topic of alcoholism right after this message. As an extension of the World Tomorrow program, a booklet entitled Alcoholism is offered. If you really want to help someone with a drinking problem, you can. But some do's and don'ts need to be considered. This booklet points out, do learn about the illness. What most people know is often misconception. Do discuss it with someone you can trust. Do approach the issue calmly. Don't punish, threaten, bribe, preach, or play the martyr.
don't cover up for, argue with, or drink along with the problem drinker. But most of all, don't ignore the problem. You can help by first examining the many causes and solutions outlined in the booklet, Alcoholism. With understanding, your concern can help someone win his or her battle with the bottle. Here's one way to start. Request the free booklet, Alcoholism. Send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C.
What is an alcoholic? And for that matter, who is an alcoholic? There are many definitions. A lot of church groups can say it's a dirty, drunken bum who's sinning by imbibing a lot of spirits or looking upon the wine while it's red or while it moveth aright in the cup. Some people say that a drunk or an alcoholic, commonly use these terms interchangeably, is a person whose whole world has been squeezed into a bottle. Perhaps the American public became first very much painfully aware of the problem of alcoholism. The famous movie by Ray Milland of Lost Weekend, when you saw the torturous withdrawal symptoms of a man who saw creatures coming out of the wall after him. The World Health Organization has another definition, that is, any individual whose use of alcohol causes regular harm to any regular aspect of his or her job, meaning harm to the lifestyle of the individual, the livelihood, job, family, or even his own health. Now, like other drugs, and maybe we shouldn't even call it a drug because alcohol, after all, is found in nature, whether in the bark of trees or dandelions or the grass in your front yard. Nevertheless, in its use as either a stimulant or a repressant, it is classified as a drug, and scientists don't fully yet understand why ethyl alcohol produces some of the symptoms it does, principally that of drunkenness or inebriation. The nature of the dependence upon alcohol by alcoholics is not fully understood as yet. Whether it's physiological, meaning from the very body and the cellular tissues itself, or whether psychological dependence because of pressures and stress. It is looked on by many people as a weakness, a lack of willpower, or even immoral and a sin. But increasingly, people are beginning to understand the problem because more and more it's coming to be known and to be classified as a disease.
Why is it now common to hear alcoholism referred to as a disease?
I think this allows us, particularly in the medical field, to identify, in other words, diagnose the problem of alcohol or diagnose the excessive use of alcohol and treat it.
This is Dr. Basil Kleiman, director of the Alcoholism Detoxification Service, Los Angeles County USC Medical Center. The interview here was conducted by World Tomorrow broadcast reporter Tom Hall.
We don't know the cause of alcoholism as we don't know the cause of many illnesses. But terming it a disease allows us to use a methodology to combat it. And that's why I favor that that concept.
Was the disease concept of alcohol slow in evolving?
Yes, it was. And it's still resisted by many who feel that alcoholism is some kind of a personal or social aberration. Has no place, and indeed many doctors still feel this way, that it has no place in legitimate medicine. But I think that in the last 5 years particularly, that this concept has disappeared to a large extent in many physicians, and particularly it's not so much the physicians, but people working in the field realize it as a disease that needs that kind of attention.
If alcoholism is a disease, are there symptoms of alcoholism just as there are symptoms for other diseases?
Yes. I think that our understanding of alcoholism, at least its initial phases, is quite clear now. Very often a patient will present with many what we call, quote, psychosomatic symptoms, headaches, backaches, sleep problems. Problems requiring a lot of agents like Valium and Librium. Problems that, despite a complete workup by the physician, fail to yield an explanation. And we then see a patient who's depressed very often. A patient who's under a lot of stress and can't handle the stress or can't handle conflicts of everyday life. And very often this patient is resorting to alcohol, and if we only questioned him about that, we would discover that indeed he had a problem. So there is then the psychosocial characterization of the disease that we can see very, very early. Secondly, If we talk to the families of the patients, we can see that a problem is being generated, and we can make the diagnosis, if you will, inferentially from what's going on with the family or the relationship, sometimes with the employer. And the people in the industry have been very quick to recognize this now, and very often they are the ones that put us on to the diagnosis early. And then thirdly, many patients will present with some of the obvious signs of alcohol excess. Sometimes it may be something no more obvious than a green tongue. This is the patient who's been sucking on chlorophyll tablets or using his binoculars to disguise the breath, and usually is a patient who had a few drinks just before he comes to the office and so forth. It may be the patient who is constantly missing an appointment because he's a little bit stoned when he just before he's to appear, and rather than give away the or give the impression that there's something happening with his life or his use of alcohol, he just won't show up. Or a patient may present with some of the frank physical or clinical signs of alcohol excess. It might be enlargement of the salivary glands. It might be enlargement of the liver. It might be some neurologic problem, problems with the patient's memory. It might be signs of liver disease, for example, certain skin signs of certain skin changes that we know occur. It may be a patient who has impotence or has problems with his sex life. There may be atrophy or changes in the testicle and in the formation of testosterone, for example, that give rise or are responsible for some of these complaints that the patient may have. So there are signs and symptoms reflective of every organ system, really, that could be early clues to alcoholism. A very interesting one, I should add, that physicians should be alert to is when a patient is on a medication, for example, and the medication doesn't seem to work. It may be a blood thinning type of medication. It may be medication for tuberculosis or for fat lowering agent or cholesterol lowering agent. And the patient is taking these medications, and yet there does not seem to be any demonstrable effect. And very often it's simply because the patient is combining alcohol with the use of the drug that we see this phenomenon occurring, and the physician should be alert to this as an early sign of alcoholism.
Dr. Kleinman, what is an alcoholic?
In medical practice, an alcoholic can be defined in two general areas. Number one, if we can identify in an individual the phenomena of tolerance, that is to say, an individual who has a high blood alcohol level. You know that legal intoxication in this state is 100 milligrams per cent, and I would hope that most of you would be fast asleep with 100 milligram per cent alcohol level. We find patients in my own practice and on our ward at the county hospital who will walk on the ward with a 600 milligram per cent alcohol level. And indeed, this is tolerance and indicates excessive use of alcohol and hence alcoholism. Conversely, when the blood alcohol level begins to decline and fall off, these patients more than likely will experience withdrawal symptoms, shakes and tremor and so forth, commonly known as DTs, though we like to call it just the alcohol abstinence phenomena. And if this is manifested in anyone, it's an indication of the excessive use of alcohol, therefore alcoholism.
Dr. Kleinman, thank you.
This has been the first program in our three-part series on alcoholism, its scope and nature. In the next program in this series, we're going to take a detailed look at four young people. We'll examine how they got started in alcoholism, and more importantly, how they began to control the problem. In the meantime, you ought to write in for a brand new booklet on the subject of alcoholism, A Worldwide Curse. This is hot off the press, brand new, never before advertised. It's absolutely free of charge. You may not realize some of the statistics here, and the facts presented will really shock you. It shows that alcoholism is the very worst of all the drug problems. For example, in 1972, nearly 10 liters, that's 2 2/3 U.S. gallons, of absolute alcohol were consumed per capita of drinking age population in the United States. Alcoholic beverages constitute an enormous growth industry and a significant source of income and tax revenue in many economies. Retail sales of alcohol in the United States amounted to $24.2 billion in 1971 alone. And by the way, that was an increase of nearly $7 billion in just 5 years. Alcohol is a big headache for a lot of people and for society as a whole. There are an estimated 9 million alcoholics and problem drinkers in the United States, and the ones on Skid Row represent only 3 to 5% of the total number of alcohol abusers. The other 95% might be the people who live and work in all levels of society. They can be educators, presidents of corporations, politicians, bankers, movie stars, carpenters. They can be truck and cab drivers, salesmen, housewives. In the United States, about 4.5 million workers suffer from alcohol-related problems, meaning health problems, not the least of which can be cirrhosis of the liver and heart disease and other problems that can be accident-related on the job. An estimated 240,000 of them hold down jobs with the U.S. government. And in terms of crime, you're going to read about the enforcement of laws relating to alcohol representing a far greater problem than enforcement of the narcotic drug laws. For example, in 1973, as this booklet shows, over 484,000 arrests were made for narcotic drug law violations in the United States, but nearly 654,000 arrests were made for driving under the influence of alcohol. Approximately 55,000 Americans die on the highways every year, and a tremendous percentage of those are alcohol-related accidents. You can read about it in this booklet, hot off the press. It shows about alcohol in the brain, what it does to the brain, how it can be a hook, and what is the tolerance and addiction to alcohol. It talks about devastating health as a result of use of alcohol, even including such implied disorders directly attributable to alcohol as various cirrhosis of the liver, which is one that afflicts about 10% of all alcoholics. Other afflictions include gastritis, gastric ulcers, chronic diarrhea, pancreatitis, and alcoholic hepatitis. Alcoholism is also believed, as you will see in this booklet, to be a factor in disorders of the heart, skeletal muscles, and skin. And you will read about teenage tippling and whether it's safer than pot, as a lot of the juveniles are saying now. A lot of young people, by the literal hundreds of thousands in the United States, are turning on to booze, saying their parents do it, it's safer, it's fun, and it doesn't have the harmful side effects. And they begin to say, alcoholism is the only way to go. And so they're on to or into liquor these days. You know, it's estimated that there are 500,000 juvenile alcoholics and problem drinkers in the United States, and tens of thousands of them are less than 12 years of age. This booklet shows the truth about that. It has a section on driving and drinking don't mix. And if someone you know drinks too much, here's a section in the booklet that is a handy series of hints of what to do and what not to do. It talks, too, about the family that drinks together in quite a section, including the pattern in certain ethnic groups and in other countries. And it talks about therapy and preventive therapy. This booklet, hot off the press, absolutely free of charge, no price, now being advertised publicly for the very first time, the new booklet on alcoholism. It covers many of the points that I will take up in this three-part series of radio programs taken from a special television program we did on the subject of alcoholism that allows us to bring a great deal of the in-depth research that went on behind the scenes in preparation for the telecast to the radio audience, and to advertise at the same time a very concise and very thorough booklet, absolutely free of charge, on the subject of alcoholism, a worldwide curse. Just mention the booklet on alcohol or on liquor. We'll know what you mean. And while you're at it, request the current number of The Plain Truth. In-depth reports from around the world in the light of Bible prophecy showing you the real meaning of today's world news. It's free of charge, no price. You can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. But be sure to tell us the call letters of the station over which you heard this program. The address will be repeated again in just a moment. Until next time, part two in this three-part series on alcoholism, This is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C.
Listeners in the U.S., write to Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, write Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. The World Tomorrow is heard daily on Cheer Radio at 5:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. We'll be right back.